Hello, good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 5th April 2022. It's a Tuesday class. We will be continuing our sharing from this book, The Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta, Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. Just relax body and mind, then you shall off the light and you can have your half an hour of awareness based meditation. So just relax body and mind completely at ease. Then follow the four supports. The second support after relaxation is maintain awareness. Just do that. Don't try to know, don't try to do anything. Maintain awareness. The third support is maintain this awareness for as long as you can. Technically, it's during your conscious moment of 24 hours if possible. And then the last one, of course, is trust. Trust your nature to move, to do the meditation without any interference from the thought process. So these are the four important support to develop awareness-based meditation. Unless you are aware, you cannot be heedful. Unless you are aware, you cannot be mindful. Without thought, you're already aware, you're already mindful. So don't create thought, don't think, don't do anything. Because the doing is always by the thought. So all this are very important understanding. The one that try to know is also from the thought, because thought is knowledge. So without thought, there is no one there. No one to know, no one to do anything. It's just the awareness nature away. Then when you let things be, your mundane mind, the thinking mind, naturally will slow down on its own and return to its original state before the thought arises, before the stirring. So this understanding are very useful if you can grasp it, remember it. Then when you meditate, it's very easy. That's why we call it awareness-based meditation. No thought involved. It just relax, maintain awareness, and stabilize the awareness. And after that, use it to meditate. Use it to be aware, to understand what is going on within our own form and mind, how we function as a human being, how thought arise, and how thought create all those movement and condition one into various emotion, mental states that condition our delusion. So all this can be understood when you completely relax, maintain awareness through that stability or awareness, observe. When you start to observe, you start to see things, you start to understand what is going on, then you will come to a clear understanding as to who are you, what are you, what is this form of mind all about, what is this human being all about. Then there is another nature which is beyond the thought process. We call it our true nature, the true mind. Okay, so I will set the alarm now, and you can have your 30 minutes of awareness-based meditation. And when the 30 minutes is up, the alarm will be triggered off, and I will ring the bell 3 times. Upon hearing the bell, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. And whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed, try to maintain them for as long as you can. Because these are the important mind state that you need. We call them spiritual faculties. They are your sadha, virya, sati, awareness. Then samadhi, the stability of sati. And finally, of course, through the observation, you develop wisdom. So this five spiritual faculty will enable you to understand spiritual teaching, to awaken. Okay. Somewhere in the middle. We are following this book, the wonderful Dhamma, Lotus Flower Sutta, Miao Fang Yifang. So when I say that stupidity is just wisdom, the principle is the same as that of the use of the sixth sense faculty. When you have heard suttas explained for a while, you will reach the point where comprehending one point, you will comprehend all. Understanding one, you will understand all. Knowing one, you will know all. Awakening to one, you will awaken to all. So this one is a very important understanding. This one refers to true awakening. When you have true awakening, this is what will happen. The inherent nature is like empty space. It contains both the true and the false. So this is exactly like what I used to share with you all. Our true nature is actually the oneness nature, complete, the whole thing. And that nature is empty, nothing inside, the unconditioned, no thought, nothing. But nothing is apart from it because it contains both the true and the false. The whole of the phenomenal world is inside. That's why the neuronal is the oneness. The phenomena is the content within. So basically, when you have that realization of your true nature, you will understand what that inherent nature is. Yeah. It is really empty. That it contains both the true and the false. Everything is there. The inherent nature of human being is just like empty space, contained within empty space, there is both the true and the false. Awaken to and phantom the basic substance. In one penetration, penetrate all. Once you have understood the doctrine of inherent nature, then when you understand one thing, you will understand everything. Take for example eating. Why do you eat? To satisfy the hunger in our stomach. All our food and drink, whether it tastes good or bad, is merely to satisfy our hungry stomach. It all serves the same purpose. Why do we wear clothes? To keep out cold. No matter what kind of clothes you wear, they all serve the purpose of protecting you from the cold. Now everyone needs to eat, wear clothes and sleep. And we look upon these three things as extremely important. Why? Because without them, every life are in danger. We should now look upon our study of the Buddha Dhamma as important as eating, as important as wearing clothes, and as important as sleeping. Without the Buddha Dhamma, our inherent nature are in danger. We must employ our sixth sense faculty in the quest of the supreme way of enlightenment. And then it may be said that the great earth quack in six ways. Those who have not sat in Dhyan meditation will not understand. But those who and may have experienced the sudden jerking of one of their hands, or perhaps their eyes, nose, or ear washing. This is the manifestation of what is termed the quaking of the six faculty. At the point of most extreme stillness, the light penetrates through, and another heaven appears. When you work intensely, when your effort reach that most extreme point, another state entirely manifests. Last summer during the Sarangama Sutra sessions, someone had some experience with this. As she sat there, her hand would suddenly and involuntarily jerk up into the air. This is a transformation undergone by the body. When there is movement, there is change. And with change comes transformation. Those who have applied effort and obtained skills such as this must still receive the guidance of a genuine, bright teacher in order to avoid taking the wrong road. Without the guidance of a genuine, bright advisor, a good knowing advisor, it is very easy to go astray, to become frightened, and then not dare to continue to apply effort. If anyone experiences this kind of state, they should not be frightened, for they are just one of the six types of quakes. The doctrine in the sutta must be applied to our own bodies and our own natures. What are the sutra for? They are to point out to each one of us personally the road which we should walk down. That is why the Buddha spoke so many suttas. The roads all are all contained within the nature of each and every one of us. The Buddha taught 84,000 dhammadhammas to cure the 84,000 kinds of bad habits and fault of living beings. We ourselves may be unaware of our fault and continue to be influenced by them in our actions. Running after our fault, turned by them, we take it as happiness. In reality, day by day we sink deeper and are unaware of what is happening. So in the sutta, the Buddha clearly points out the path to each one of us. The six types of quakes are not separated from our own six sense faculty. Why do the six sense faculty quake? The quaking represents the destruction of ignorance. Why are there six? Because ignorance is broken through six times. Ignorance is broken at the first fruit, second fruit, and the third fruit, and at the fourth fruit. Then ignorance is broken at the level of equal enlightenment. Having broken through ignorance at the level of equal enlightenment, one realizes Buddhahood. So the six types of earthquake represent these six levels, six positions. The first fruit, second fruit, third, and the fourth fruit. Then Bodhisattvahood and Buddhahood. This has been a general explanation of the six types of earthquake. So this one is the explanation by Master Shen Hua. Okay, now we go to chapter one. We are in chapter 1. Now page 10. Okay. So we continue. Sutta. So the first part is a sutra. After that is the commentaries. At that time, the entire great assembly of bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upaseka, upasaka, upasika, gods, dragons, yakas, gandavas, asura, garudas, kinaras, mahoragas, beings, human and non-human, as well as the minor kings and wheel-turning sage king, all attain what they have never had before. They rejoice and join their palms, and with one heart gaze upon the Buddha. So this was the sutra part. So we go to the commentary. This is the fifth, the portent of the rejoicing of the assembly. Everyone rejoiced. Everyone was happy. At that time, right then. What time was that? It was just as the sixth kind of earthquake occurred. The entire great assembly, those present in the Dhamma Flower Assembly, all the great bhikkhus, the bhikkhunis, the word bhikkhus are three meanings. First, mendicant, frightener of Mara, and destroyer of evil. A bhikkhuni is a woman who has left home, with the same three meaning applied. There was once a Zen master or cultivator who cultivated and cultivated until he became enlightened. When he got enlightened, he went to find a greatly virtuous, lofty member of the Sangha and to give him certification. The lofty Sangha member asked him, "What have you obtained?" "I have obtained nothing," he replied. This is like today, when the passage from the Vajra Sutta came up in which the Buddha questions Subhati, has the Taskamwan obtained Anuttara Samyat Sambhogi? The enlightened bhikkhu said he had not obtained anything, and so the Sangha member asked him, "What enlightenment have you come to?" He said, "I know that a bhikkhuni is a woman." The greatly virtuous one said, "Oh, I will grant that you are enlightened. You have truly become enlightened." Because the greatly virtuous Sangha member had gained the use of the five eyes, the Buddha eye, the heavenly eye, the wisdom eye, the Dhamma eye, and the flesh eye. He knew that the cultivator had become enlightened and was not lying. And so he certified his enlightenment. If any one of us were to say the same thing, would it necessarily bring a means that we have become enlightened? Imitating others is not enlightenment. Imitating the words of others is not enlightenment. You must have your own individual viewpoint. To merely imitate the words of others is not an indication of enlightenment. The sentence which the cultivator spoke had never been spoken by anyone. He said, "Now I know for sure that a bhikkhuni is something a woman can be." And so his enlightenment was certified. If you were to say the same thing, it would not mean that you were enlightened. And no one would certify you. Why? Because you had just be imitating someone else, and it would not be something you enlighten the one your own. Then the Upasaka and the Upasikas. Upasaka are male lay people. Upasika are female lay people. There are two ways of explaining this term. Translated from Sanskrit, Upasaka means a man who draw near to serve. Upasika means a woman who draw near to serve. That's the first explanation. Sometimes they live in the temple, in which case they are not called man or woman who draw near to serve, but rather man and woman who draw near to live, which is the second explanation. Bhikkhu, bhikkhuni, upasaka, and upasika comprise the fourfold assembly of disciples. God are those who live in the heavens, those who dwell in the six desire realm heavens, and the other heavens. Dragons are big worms. What do the big worm eat? They eat little worms. Since they eat little worm, the great golden winged pink bird avenge the little worm and keep the score even by eating the dragons, the big worm, yakas. Yaka is a Sanskrit word It means speedy. They are extremely fast and quick. It also means bold and steady. These greatly powerful ghosts or spirits are extremely brave, healthy, and strong. The great yakas, ghosts, and spirits can tip the mountain over into the sea. With one hand, they can throw a mountain several hundred miles. They can move the mountains. We now have hydraulic jack, and none of them can move mountains. The yaka ghosts are so brave and strong that they can throw them several hundred li with one hand, and with the other, they can catch them and bring them down or back. Would you say they were strong or not? Then the other one is Gandavas. Are the music-making spirits? Asura. Everyone knows them as the whiniest one or the ugly ones. They have the blessing of the god, but not the authority of the god. They have no influence in heaven. The male Asura look like one of the eight kinds of ugly monster. They are hideous. Nothing could be uglier. The female Asura are very beautiful, to say nothing of people. When even the Jake Emperor sees them, his heart moves with thoughts of desire. That's why he asked the Asura king for his daughter's hand in marriage and took an Asura girl as his wife. Then the next one is the Garudas, the big bird, the great golden winged pink bird. You have all heard about him many times, and perhaps some of you have even seen him. Some have only heard of him. Those who have seen him, what's he like? The little Samanera knows the great golden winged pink bird. Kinaras are also music spirits in the court of the Jake Emperor. They have a single horn in their head, and so people doubt whether they are spirit or not, and they are called doubtful spirit. They have their doubts about whether or not they are spirits, but ultimately are they spirits? There is no way to decide it once and for all. However, they do make music for the Jake Emperor. They play guitars and things like that. But they are not like human, because they have a horn on their head, the doubtful spirit. Then we have the Mahoragas, the great Boyan snake. They are extremely big. Exactly how big are they? They are a bit smaller than dragon. Do you know how big dragons are? You will know how big Mahoragas are. But then there are big dragons and small dragons. There are also big Mahoragas and smaller ones. Beings, human, are people, and non-human are those of the ghost and spirit and the rest of the eightfold division, as well as the minor king, the whole, the wheel-turning sage kings. As Sakyamuni Buddha left home one day later than he did, he would have become a great wheel-turning king. The great wheel-turning king had a great abundance of blessing because they begets 1,000 sons and has 7 treasures which are like the SU whirlpool. Whenever they need money for their travel expense, they just scrape off a patch of earth and take out as much gold or silver as they need. It's all as you were according to your wish. They have a chariot in which, in a flash, they can travel around all the 4 continents, a distance greater than from here to the moon. It takes them no time at all. There are 4 kinds of wheel-turning sage king. The golden wheel-turning king watches over one set of the 4 continents, Jambuwapi, the south, Puwavi, Deha, in the east, and Apara, Gaudiya in the west and Uttarakura in the north. He rules them all. The silver wheel turning king watches over three continents. He does not rule over Uttarakura, but does rule over the remaining three. The bronze wheel turning king watches over Jambuvampi and Puavi Deva. The iron wheel turning king only watches over Jambuvampi. Someone may ask, during the time of Sakyamuni Buddha, was such wheel-turning kings ruling? That's a good question. There were none in our world at all at that time. And where did they come from? They came from worlds in other directions. You shouldn't take such a narrow viewpoint and see only a space as big as your own house. You have neighbors. Don't you? And there are the villages and the big cities. Don't be like a country person on his first trip to the city. Although there were no wheel-turning Sikh king ruling in the Sahara at that time of Sakyamuni Buddha, they did come from other worlds. What other worlds? It would take a long time to investigate the question, and right now, I don't have the time. The entire great assembly refer to all those assembled whom we just discussed. Ultimately, how many were present? Even the Buddha didn't know. How could I tell you? Then, according to the sutta, all attain what they have never had before. They rejoice and join their palms together. Everyone was joyful, just as now. Those who understand, we are laughing. Those who don't understand what I am saying think, what are they laughing at all? And what's going on in their hearts? They want to laugh too, but they are afraid. They will laugh in the wrong place, and so they don't dare. Wait until the translation, then they will laugh. Then the next part of the sutta is, with one heart grace at the Buddha. This is the portent of the rejoicing of the assembly. They all stare unblinking at the Buddha without turning their gaze away. They look up at him. Then the next part of the sutta. Then the Buddha emitted emitted from between his eyebrow a white hair mark like, which illuminate 18,000 worlds in the east, omitting none of them. Then commentary. When was that? The word then has the same meaning as at that time, which was the phrase used in the sixth quaking of the earth. It was not the same time, however. Then what time was it? It was at the time when the great assembly rejoiced and with one high grace upon the Buddha. It was at this time that the Buddha saw that everyone in the great assembly was rejoicing, and so he too rejoiced. He rejoiced and emitted light, and so this was the sixth, the portent of emitting light. The sixth portent, which has just been discussed, took place in this world. There are also six portents which occur in other worlds, which will be discussed. The Buddha emitted from between his brow, and this is a commentary part, from the space in between his two eyebrows, a white hair mark light. If you look at the Buddha image, you will see a gem between the Buddha's brow, which represent the white hair mark light. Buddha images are made of clay or wood, and there is no way to show the Buddha's white hair mark, except to represent it with a jewel. The white hair mark can extend very far or remain very near. It is somewhat like a glass tube, illuminating the 18,000 world to the east. The east is associated with wood, and the wood with birth. The Buddha illuminated 18,000 worlds to the end, to the east. 18,000 worlds are not too many. It's still a calculable number. All the 18,000 worlds receive the universal illumination of the Buddha's light, omitting none of them. Not one of the 18,000 worlds failed to receive the light. This has been a discussion on the sixth potent of everything light. Then we move on to the next part of the sutta. Reaching below to the Avicii hell and above to the Akanistha's heaven means the formless rhyme. From this world were seen all the living beings in the sixth destiny in those lands. Commentary. This begins a new section on the six potent in other worlds. When Sakyamuni Buddha emitted light, not only were potents seen in this world, but potents in other worlds also were seen, reaching below to the Avicii hells. Avicii is a Sanskrit word. It means unspaced. In the unspaced hell, there is no space. In the sense that if one person is in that hell, it is full. And if many people are in the hell, it is also full. There is also no breaking time spent in this hell. Both time and space are uninterrupted. It is not known how long one has fallen into this hell. Must stay there. It is called unspaced. And above to the Akanistha heaven. Akanistha is also Sanskrit and means the ultimate form, heaven, in the realm of form. It is the highest heaven. From this world, from the Saha world, looking eastward to 18,000 worlds, were seen all the living beings of the six deaths. Destiny in those lands. The god, the people, asura, hell being, hungry ghost, and animal. These are the living beings of the sixth path. Everyone could see them and could see very clearly and distinctly what retribution were being undergone by the beings in each particular path. The living beings in the sixth destiny are those turning on the wheel of the sixth path of rebirth. Liu Tao Lun Hui. The turning wheel will be familiar to those who have listened to the Sutta lecture, but those who have not will not understand the concept, so I shall explain it again. What is meant by living being in the sixth destiny? The sixth destiny are the first three, the god, the demon, and the people. These are known as the three wholesome paths. Then we have the hell beings, the hungry ghosts, and the animal realm. These are known as the three evil paths. Asura are sometimes classified in the three wholesome paths, and sometimes in the four evil destiny. There is asura, hell being, hungry ghosts, and the animal realm. So under that Theravada teaching, the 31 plane of existence, asura are the demon realm. They are part of the hell realm, the hungry ghost and the animal realm. We call this the four evil destiny. The gods are beings who live in the heavens. How did they become gods? Through the cultivation of minimum, the five precepts and the 10 good deeds. The five precepts are the basic precept which must be held by Buddhist disciple. They are non-killing, non-stealing, no sexual misconduct, no lying, and no partaking of intoxicants. One who maintains the precept against killing for a long time will receive the reward of longevity. Why do some people live for so long? And those of such a short period of time, and others for such a short period of time. Those who live long do so because they have received the retribution of long life as a result of having maintained the precept against killing. Those who have a short life in the past enjoy killing and have received the retribution of a short lifespan. Such are the retribution involved with the precept against killing. Why should one maintain the precept against stealing? Stealing robs people of their valuables and their happiness as well. Stealing means that you secretly take other people's thing without their knowing. What kind of retribution does one receive for this type of karma? In the past, you will not be able to keep your wealth for long. In the future, you will not be able to keep your wealth for very long. You may have a lot of money and property, but it will soon be stolen away from you. You undergo this retribution because in previous time, you stole and robbed from others. You failed to keep the precept. And so, in your present life, you will be robbed of all your own wealth. If it lasts, that's because you keep the precept. Those who remain wealthy and honored do so because they keep the precept. Those who do not keep the precept will not be wealthy and honored for long. Then the third precept, sexual misconduct, followed by lying and partaking of intoxicants, work in the same way as the first two above. For example, you don't keep the precept against sexual misconduct and violate it. In the future, others will violate your wife. That's the retribution. Lying works the same way. If you don't deceive others, you will be deceived by others. If you don't deceive others, you will not be deceived by others. Yeah. You say in this lie, I have not deceived anyone. Why have so many people deceived me? Didn't I just explain it? Retribution is not a matter of simply in a single lifetime. It involves the past, present, and future. You may not have deceived anyone in this life, but do you know how many people you deceived in your last life or previous life? You don't know. You don't know. And so when other people deceive you, it's because you deserve it. As to taking intoxicant, drinking wine, it's not a major fault to speak of. The problem is that when you drink, you tend to drink too much. It turns you upside down. So you do crazy things. In Buddhism, drinking or taking any intoxicant substance is prohibited. Wine muddles the nature. When you have been drinking and you try to talk, your tongue is so big and you can't speak clearly. For that reason, Buddhism discourages the taking of intoxicants. There are many principles involved in keeping the five precepts. The most important thing is that not only do we not kill with our hand, but we do not have thought of killing either. Then we are truly keeping the precept of not killing. Stealing works the same way. Not only we do not steal with our hand, we do not have thought of stealing in our heart. It doesn't matter whether the item is large or small. If no one has given you permission and you make use of other people's thing, you have broken the precept against stealing. As a small example, say someone buys a bottle of wine and you see it and drink. What's his is mine, and what's mine is mine, and you drink a glass. That is a violation of the precept against stealing. So you have broken the precept against stealing and the precept against consuming intoxicant. Now you may think, I don't drink, so I couldn't break that precept. So you don't drink wine, Well, you drink milk, don't you? What about the carton of milk in the refrigerator that paying no attention to the consequence, you open and drink. Then when somebody asks you, who brought the milk? Who bought the milk? All you can say is, I don't know, I just drank it. Now, wouldn't you say that was acting unreasonably? Although milk is not a big deal, if you drank it without the owner's permission, you are guilty of stealing. The same applies to other food items or things in general. On the other hand, if someone steals from you, you should take a good look at yourself. Why are they stealing my food? It must be that in former life, I stole food, and so in this life, it has come back to me. Well, forget it. That's what the people who is stolen from, should think. The people who stole it, however, can't say, I am stealing your food now. And you can go ahead and steal it back from me the next life. How do you know you will have any food to be stolen in your next life? For all you know, you may not have anything at all in your next life. And then how should someone steal from you? So don't harbor thought of stealing. If you didn't buy it, you don't use it as you please. If you get the owner's permission, it's okay. Otherwise, you can't go around sneaking other people's things. You talk about the final point. To take even a blade of grass, a splinter of wood, a needle or a piece of thread without asking is considered stealing. Sexual misconduct, lying and taking the intoxicant work the same way. Having explained one precept, you should be able to understand the rest of them. To say too much would waste a lot of time. How does one get born in the heaven? Through holding the five precepts. Born in the heaven, one enjoys unlimited heavenly blessing. However, they eventually come to an end. When the five signs of decay appear, one falls. Therefore, the heavens are not ultimate. Asura also foster merits and virtue, but they do it with affliction. How can one foster merits and virtue with affliction, you ask? When doing it, they concentrate solely on competing with others. They say, belligerently, I gave $5 to the temple. How much do you give? They pit themselves against everyone else. You give 5, I will give 10. Oh, you give 10, I will give 20. They fight to be number one, and in the future, they turn into Asura. They have merits and virtue. Alright, but they compete to get it. It's not done from their hearts. They also fight for fame. They want people to say, see, so and so is number one. He gave the most money, fighting for top billing. It's a sure way to become an Asura. In the practice of the Buddha Dharma, it is essential to have a true understanding of cause and effect, that your effort won't go all mess up. Some people even think, since I can get famous here, I will go somewhere. Oh, sorry, since I can't get famous here, I will go somewhere else. Then everyone think, see, so and so, he went all the way to New York to do act of great merits and virtue. That way, everyone knows. These are the causes and conditions of becoming an Asura in the future. Such people will become Asuras. As soon as they start talking, they get angry. No matter what's going on, they have to be number one. To do act of merit and virtue without cutting off attrition is merely to perform meritorious and virtuous act, which have outflow It is not outflow. It is non-outflow merits and virtue. You should do merits and virtue, but don't insist that everyone recognize you as number one or number two. There is, however, another type of person who shun fame. He sneaks around doing merits and virtue, and then secretly tells someone, "Hey, I did $5,000 of merits and virtue over there, and no one knows I did it. I am just telling you, really." They two are asuras, and they are even worse than the one that mentioned above. Why? Because they are the yin asura, not the yang. On the surface, it looks like they don't like fame, but in reality, they are behind the back sell advertising campaign are even worse. So if you bring forth the resolve to do merits and virtue, remember that if the causal ground is not genuine, the result will be distorted. When you are planting causes, if you do not plant properly or proper ones, when the time comes to reap the fruit, it will be deformed, that you will become asura. What's wrong with that, you ask? There's plenty wrong with you. All they do is fight. Does that appeal to you? As to the destiny of people who does want, as to the destiny of people, how does one become a human being? Okay, before we go to the human rhyme, the asura rhyme or the demon rhyme, they are born into that rhyme because they have a lot of anger. They are very violent. Yeah. So if you have a mixture of what they call negative emotion, then at the same time, you also have some form of merits or virtue, because like Master Shenhua gave as example, they want to compete, they want to argue, and when they compete is not for other things but to do charity and all those things. And the intent behind is not pure, and because of that anger, that hatred, the envy, the jealousy, wanting to be better, competitive, all these are negative virtue born of the evil root of hatred. We have the three evil root of greed, hatred and delusion. So hatred comes with delusion. So although you may be trying to do good, but because you have a lot of deluded thought process, so it will condition you to do things wrongly in a negative way. And because you have the evil root of anger, that's why you are most likely to be born in the asura rhyme or demon rhyme. Then animal rhyme is for those with stupidity or delusion. Then hungry ghost or pitta rhyme are for those who has a lot of greed, selfishness, craving, desire. Normally it's greedy people, selfish people, a lot of desire, covetous. Then hell rhyme are beings with all the three words, and when you are in hell, you really suffer like that. Because the Buddha has given one of the explanation in one of the sutta, I remember. Really, really miserable. Like Shenhua said, there is no space at all. This time is like unending. You keep on suffering, non-stop suffering. That is what Abhijja Hell is all about. So if you can develop more and more understanding, virtue, and avoid the four willful states. This asura line, although is intermediary, the Mahayana sometimes they group them under the wholesome rhyme, that they are very near to the human rhyme and the deva rhyme. But they are also classified as the evil destiny because of their evil result, anger, hatred. So because of that, under Theravada tradition, they are classified as unwholesome. So Theravada got a better description. They say the asura are classified as the kamaloka, sensual realm. Kamaloka, but the suffering realm. Kama dukkati. This karma is K-A-M-A. It is sensual realm. But sensual realm or suffering. So these are the four evil destinies. Then the other one is the sensual realm of happiness or joy. Kama sukkati. So this one includes the human realm, the deva realms. And the deva realms there, they include the Brahma rhyme too, the six deva rhyme, the 16 Brahma rhyme, and the four formless rhyme. That's why these are the heavenly rhyme. They call it the Tian Pa Jie. So they are classified as the sensual rhyme up to the six deva rhyme. They call it the sensual rhyme of happiness. Kama Sukkati. And after that is the Rupa Loka, form rhyme, where the Brahma, the 16 Brahma rhyme are. Then they have the Arupa Loka, or the formless rhyme. As I sometimes hear people say, the three rhyme, San Pa Jie. So the three rhyme are basically the sensual rhyme, which include the happy and the unhappy rhyme. Then after the sensual rhyme is the form rhyme. That's why they call Kamaloka, Rupa Loka, form rhyme. Loka is existence or rhyme. Then Arupa Loka. So this differentiate the thing. Okay. So we continue a little bit more. You won't be following the pages anymore. I just want to summarize the last part where Shen Hua go through. I think this book is based on the old version. The old version, the language is not so good. The description is not so good. So it's a bit confusing, I think. If you listen to what we read through, it may not bring out the beauty of precepts and the importance of precepts and what basically are precepts. Because under the Buddha's teaching, the Theravada tradition, which has been passed down over the years, is very well documented. In fact, the Pali chanting, they have them all. So when it comes to precepts, the Buddha always used this word, like the first precept. Panati papa viramani sikkhapada samadhiyami. So the last part, samadhiyami, is always repeated. So the meaning is, I undertake the training rules. That part is very important. To abstain from killing. That's why panati papa, killing. So precept is for us to abide, to keep. And how do we keep them? We need to understand clearly the Buddha knew it's impossible for living being to be perfect and don't break the precepts. That's why he used the word, we undertake the training rule. We must train ourselves to keep these precepts so that we don't violate them. That's why we undertake the training rules to abstain. He used the word abstain. Try not to, as far as possible, killing or causing harm to fellow living beings. How do we train? That's why the teaching stress on mindfulness. You need mindfulness, awareness. You need to be aware. Aware of what? First, aware of the precepts. Basically, what are precepts? Why do we keep precepts? That I explained before. The advice of the Buddha is based on the law of karma. Because under the law of karma, the Buddha came to this great realization. He said, all living beings, not only human beings, all living beings, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. So if karma plays such a great role in our life, then we must take care of karma. Otherwise, our life will be gone. We will be greatly afflicted. We will have miserable life. Why? Because our karma is the basis of life. We are born of it. We inherit everything, heir to it. Then we are conditioned and supported by it. Then finally, we are what we are because of that karma, that coming nature that we create. So if you want to have the good life, you must take care of karma. And how do we take care of karma? That's why the advice of the Buddha comes about. You have to avoid all evil. And the Buddha knew breaking the five precepts constitute major evil because this has very, very severe karmic repercussion. Karmic, what they call karmic consequences. So because of that, he introduced the five precepts, minimum five precepts, so that you undertake the training rule to abstain from doing all those things. Otherwise, your karmic nature will fall. Then your life will be affected, afflicted. Then you will suffer. So this is how it all started. And the Buddha knew these five precepts constitute major evil. Yeah. People who break these precepts, you can go and investigate and check. They have the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's why the Buddha called the three evil roots, roots of all evil, make you evil, cause your coming downfall, negativity. And you have to be aware of the serious consequence of violating such precepts. Because your life, you have to decide how you want to live your life. If you choose to be heedless, go ahead. Then don't complain when you suffer. Then when you cannot have the good life, don't be remorseful or be unhappy. Then you reap what you sow. Do good because good, do evil because evil. Then the other aspect about awareness is we undertake the training rule. And how do we undertake the training rule? We train ourselves to be mindful, to be aware, so that we can see clearly our mental intention behind our greed, our selfishness, our covetousness, our craving, our desire, our envy, our jealousy, our hatred, our fear, emotion, insecurity, scarcity, everything that makes us evil and negative. That's why we must be mindful. We have to develop the understanding of the essential Dhamma, what constitutes evil. Then have mindfulness to be aware of these evil roots. this evil mental intention that condition action, speech, and thought process. That's why without mindfulness, we cannot start. Without mindfulness, we cannot keep our precepts. Without mindfulness, we cannot develop the stability of mind to enter samadhi. Because without precept, very difficult. You will have a lot of problems related to the breaking of the precepts. It not only bring about suffering, it bring about karmic obstruction too. That's why your cultivation all will be affected. So precept is very important. That's why the Buddha understood all this teaching and taught us through the teaching, especially the Theravada teaching. When he asked the monk to administer the five precepts, the eight precepts, or the monk's precept, and they always emphasize on the importance of precept. Sīle na sukhanti yanti. Precept is the source of spiritual happiness. Then sīle na bhoga sampadan. Precept is the source of spiritual wealth. Then sīle na nimunti yanti. Tasma silang visode. So the last one is precept is the source of peacefulness of mind. To meditate, you need this tree to cultivate and to meditate. You need to have sukha, you need to have spiritual wealth, you need to have peacefulness of mind. And these are the five precepts the monk is recited by the monk to you. And you have to keep them. And why you have to keep them? Because it is conducive for your good life, for your cultivation, to support you in all aspects of cultivation and life. So precept has this great significance and understanding. So when you understand this as a basis, then only you can start your cultivation to be a true Buddhist, a true Buddhist devotee, to be worthy of the Buddha. Because if you want to call yourself a Buddhist devotee or a Buddhist practitioner or whatever, you need to understand the essential Dhamma or the essence of the Buddha's teaching so that you know how to cultivate it. If you cannot cultivate all this teaching, means you are not worthy of the Buddha. How can you call yourself a Buddhist when you don't even understand his teaching? When you don't even put his teaching into practice and cultivate accordingly? Then the other aspect about the precept is always remember you reap what you sow. Do good because good, do evil because evil. So whatever kindness you have done, like non-killing, instead of stealing, misappropriating, you do the ennobler. You become very generous. Instead of non-killing, you do the ennobler. You become very compassionate, very loving, very helpful. And you free life. You heal the sick and all those things. Then instead of committing sexual misconduct, all those things, you develop understanding, decency, basic decency. Then instead of lying with motive behind for benefits and personal gain and all those things, you should know all this, you reap what you sow. If you kill people, cheat people, deceive people, do all those funny things to people, in future when you come, you will become the victim. People will kill you, harm you, cheat you, deceive you, and do all sorts of things to you. If that is not what you want, you better keep to the precepts. And when you have goodness, kindness, virtue, generosity, this will become your inheritance because you reap what you sow. When you give to your karmic nature, your nature will receive back. That's why they always have this word, the more you give, the more you receive. Yeah. When you are kind to people, people will be kind to you. When you are good to people, people will be good to you. So have that understanding. Live your life in accordance with that understanding and you will be beautiful. Then selfishness can be rooted out. Initially, of course, slowly, slowly, the egoic mind, the selfishness, the craving, the desire, the emotion, the anger, all this, you can only root it out when you understand karma. Because this evil will arise and condition your negativity of karma. You reap what you sow. If that is not what you want, you don't want people to do this now to you, then make sure you avoid them. You keep your prison. You do not arise anger, hatred, selfishness, emotional negativity, etc. So when you give people like faith, understanding, and help people out of suffering, means the gift of life, the gift of fearlessness, all these things. So all this will become your inheritance in future. When you need such support, they will come back to you because you have cultivated them before. That's why ability to help people through Dhamma way, through understanding, can prevent them from developing the fear, the anxiety, the sorrow, the lamentation, and can free them, liberate their mind, so that they can become proper human beings again, so that they can develop the understanding to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind, following the advice of the Buddha to bring about better life, to turn things around. Okay, so this is the part I want to add to the sharing, because otherwise it will be very boring and it's like not much head or tail in the explanation. I think it's the old version of the book. I believe when Shen Hua teach and share, the Mandarin part must be a lot different, a lot different. Yeah. So this translation may not be comprehensive enough. But whatever it is, based on what I share, I think that one is enough, very detailed. Yeah. Good enough for cultivator. Okay, now we open up for meditation reporting and Q&A.
Don't have much to share on.
Well, do you have any question? Do you have any question or anything about today's topic? Especially on the precept part and all this thing.
This one very basic.
Yeah, we have heard. But it's very important and it's very deep. The meaning is very deep. A lot of people underestimate the importance of precepts. Actually, understanding precept is not basic. When you understand precept, means you have the Dhamma. Yeah, it's as serious as that. If people take precept to be very basic and take it very lightly, it means they don't really have deep understanding of the cultivation. Their precept is the basis of all cultivation. That's why everything starts from sila. Without sila, nothing.
Yeah, that's why it's basic. That's the one we have learned right from the beginning when we started learning about Buddhism. You have to keep the precepts.
Yeah, you are told to keep the precepts. But do you really understand how is it like to keep the precept? The significance of keeping precepts. Why precepts? And what are precepts, basically? So all the understanding, which I just summarized for you, how the advice of the Buddha come about, is not taught in basic Buddhist teaching. They only tell you the five precepts and tell you to keep the five precepts. How to keep, never really taught. And the essential Dhamma behind all this cultivation of the precept, the undertaking of the training rule, nobody really ran into it. So that understanding behind the basis of it, the importance of it, the significance of it, when you understand that, means you have the Dhamma already. You can link precept to all the essential Dhamma that the Buddha mentioned, the five daily contemplation, the last one, and the basis of precepts, morality, the three evil roots. So all this, the advice of the Buddha, Dhamma, Panna, verse 183, they are all connected, interrelated. Even the Dhammapada verses on heedfulness, they are all connected. That's why precept is not what people think, because maybe you use the word basic in a different content, maybe. Because precept is very important and very, really not easy to fully comprehend. People who comprehend what precept is and the importance and significance of precept means they have the Dhamma. Can understand?
Yeah. The Mahayana takes it very very detailed.
Not really. They may expand on it a bit, but the understanding behind is still not really taught in the way that it's supposed to be taught. They are told the precepts are important, yes. The emphasis is much, much more strong than Theravada. And you cannot practice because they take it as very serious. What they call serious thought. So all this is how actually the traditional teaching will pass down, but the understanding behind the significance and the importance and the way to cultivate it, that one I realize is missing. And people just know that precepts are important, I have to keep. Then they complain, oh, this is so difficult. Why so troublesome? Very, very fun and honestly. But if you understand, there is no question of mafanawa because it is out of love and compassion for living beings that the Buddha advised the living being to keep to the precepts. That's why this understanding is not there. It's not to say you want to make life difficult for you, force you to keep your precepts. No, it's to protect you so that your coming, your life are not affected. Otherwise, you will be very severely afflicted. So precepts are key to cultivation. That's why it starts with sila. Without sila, samadhi cannot kick in. Your mind state cannot be what a conducive cultivator and meditator would like to have. We have the three types of benefits, source of spiritual happiness, spiritual wealth, and spiritual peacefulness of mind. They are very, very important and very conducive for having the good mind state to do the meditation and to cultivate.
I think the peace of mind, it gives you peace of mind because you don't
have mind come about
wrong and done that wrong.
True, like you know, you are not break the precept, then you have peace of mind. People won't come after you. You won't get yourself in trouble and tangle with the law and all those things. Like you commit sexual misconduct, you go and steal, you go and kill, you go and misappropriating and harm people, you are getting into trouble. And then you lie, you cheat, you deceive, and you become very unscrupulous. So all this behavior is going to create hell out of your life. Then how can you have peace? You are constantly in fear. Fear of people coming after you, taking revenge on you, fear of the police, the law. Then if you break the third precept, you scared your spouse may come to know. That fear is very severe. And on top of fear, there is also this worry, anxiety. Then when things go wrong, sorrow, lamentation, you may be charged for homicide or murder. And the civil law against all this are very severe, very, very traumatic. Then when you break the fifth precept, you take drugs and other things or intoxicants, you can get yourself into big trouble. You can break all the other precepts. And these are very serious activity that must not be committed, because it is so serious. If you don't love yourself, you don't value your life, then nothing to say. If you do truly understand the significance and consequence of precepts, you will never let it happen. They're not worth the effort. Then let you know the peacefulness of mind is important. Without precept, you cannot have that type of mind. While you meditate also, you worry. Your mind is restless. When it's restless, it's full of fear, worry, anxiety. So that type of mind cannot meditate. Then the other one is...
Say, this Raymond, to Ipoh and for his Qingbing, and he came down with COVID.
Oh, not very common, don't worry, very common.
So I've got a lot of work to do.
Definitely. Then you must mask now.
Yeah, he's quarantined. I've got to help though.
You have to double mask. Don't play a fool. Then sanitize. But normally it's asymptomatic or mild symptom. Not so bad. You got medication with you or not?
The Lianhua pills, and we got
something
and
all
that.
That one is.
Then the we're waiting to get tested.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. You can do the self test. You can also confirm it with the PCR. I think Man Yuan also almost the whole family gonna, and then they recover. No problem.
They have recovered already.
Sister, they are also put your whole family gonna. I think they are almost fully recovered already. So you have to make sure no serious symptom. Any sore throat or not, Raymond?
For Raymond. Yes, his cough is dry cough with sore throat and fever.
Oh, then have to take care. Have to take medication.
His fever has left already, he's still having his dry cough and sore throat.
Oh, that one you need to buy the cough medication and also sore throat medication.
That Lianhua Peel should be able to
that
help.
One is a very good overall like medicine, a medication to treat the COVID-19, that it will help. But to speed up the what they call the recovery, I think sometimes the throat can be quite bad. Yeah, when my son had it many months ago, I think at least 3 to 4 months ago.
Oh, that's a delta.
I don't know, or half a year already, my son, my wife say. That time, he cannot even swallow water. No? Very serious.
Ah, the symptoms are different.
But he managed to get one cough, what's it? Tongue.
His one is spray.
Or spray on, not swallow on.
Cannot swallow.
Oh, he cannot swallow. So he buy the spray on, it seems. That one very good. Dr. Pascal, sorry. Then he slowly recovered. But he took the Lianhua Xing Wen, don't know what, that one he took. He took, then he recovered. They're initially very bad. The throat can't even swallow. I tried to give her, give him that. Last time I take the cough, the throat feel very soothing. Last time I remember Leslie bought for me, that was very good. But he cannot, he said, don't ask me to drink any of this because the throat was so bad. Then he buy the spray on them. I think the doctor gave him some medication. Then he recovered. If you got such symptom, better consult doctor and get some good medication. But if the fever is gone, means it's working. Then the Lianhua, you have to make sure he had enough. You need to take for 3-4 days, I think. And every day, 3 sessions. Every time 4.
Suppose it's 3 sessions.
And but, every time 4 of the tablet, the capsule.
I suppose it takes 4, but we're afraid that it has side effects because of his diabetic background.
Okay. That's why you must find out on your own. So how many days already?
Last Friday, the symptoms started. This is about 5 days.
5 days. It may take up to 9 days, I think. Before, so he's still, the sensor is still okay, and no loss of taste or whatever.
No. The this Omicron is different. It's just a dry cough.
Yeah. My son was last time, the taste gone. It took him about, I think, 10 days to get back the taste slowly. So you smell and the taste. Omicron not so bad. Omicron, I think, more milder. So you have to really be the good wife. So now is the right time for you to serve Raymond back. Raymond take care of you for so long.
He can wait for me to go and get things done. He'll come out and I say, hey, you're done to spread the virus to us.
That's why you have to go through it, then you learn. There's a lot of things that you have to do. But nowadays, normally quite common. Once kena, whole family kena. That's why I need to be very careful. He went back to Ipoh.
He went back. Only 2 of them got hit by the rest of his brothers were okay.
Okay. That's why sometimes it depends on the condition.
It depends on condition. And
so tell Raymond to rest well and have proper sleep medication. And hopefully he should recover, no problem. But you check the oxygen now, don't play a fool.
Sorry, check what?
The oxygen.
Oh, yeah. the oximeter.
Yeah.
Okay. His breathing is all right.
Then this the lung are okay. Then the symptom will go.
It is around the throat area.
Yeah,
that he has to clear
out. Gargle with salt water or the mouthwash. Yeah? Gargle often.
Mm-hmm.
And take the what? Ku cha.
Ku cha.
Ku cha, ping anon, the call there. Fu cha.
I don't know how to make that.
No.
Because we are not supposed to go out.
One packet. One packet.
Those are impacts.
Ping an, huh? They just put in the boiling water, then make one glass, then drink throughout the day. We have been drinking that one quite often. There's Sister Padmasri last night put on the WhatsApp, remember? Or Kayamita who wants to buy. I think somebody donated quite a number of Kayamita donated.
I still have that.
Make for Raymond to drink. Bill, we all drink that one so far.
I drink so that I don't get COVID.
that one is preventive. My wife say preventive. You ask Raymond to drink. No. Preventive, but must drink. When he kena, also must drink. It's good for the throat. And it take care of all this, what they call COVID-19 virus.
Prevent from being hit by it.
Yeah.
Then I think a lot of vitamin C.
Yes, that was very important. Vitamin C, yes. Good. So you are around, so no problem. So your children all will have to ask them not to come,
My son, we told him already not to come.
Your daughter is with you,
Luckily, she's helping.
Good.
Very troublesome.
Definitely. You need more people. Yes, sometimes you got to prepare food for him, you got to go and tapao.
We all cannot go out, so have to cook.
Oh, you also cannot go out.
To be close contact.
Yeah, close contact. Then your daughter can go out.
Also, but we had no choice. We had to go and buy test kits and all that. Go out quickly and come
just
back.
Just like Manyuan also had to go out. No choice. Because the parents are 80 plus already.
She has to go down. Manian was saying she has to go down and
help
a bit.
And the brother also helping her. Then later on, the brother will look at her.
her family now is okay. So then she has built up the immunity already.
Yeah, recovering. That's why it's quite common. Don't worry. So
actually,
anyway,
I was very busy at Ajahn Anand's retreat.
Oh, okay. Finished already, right?
Finished. That's when he came back.
It
was ending already.
Oh, lucky. So anyway, we were also ready. Metta for Raymond. Luckily, you informed us. Don't worry. Tell him. But must have enough rest. Then also must take the medication. Initially the body is like very lethargic, very tired. I think I heard Manyuan also mentioned the Bandania. But once they recover, especially Manyuan say the father, down until cannot even walk and all. The moment he recovered, 80 something, can walk, can do a lot of things, drive and all this thing. That's why you listen to the Manyan sharing is very interesting. The COVID hit the father. Then when the father recovered, he became very energetic after that.
Oh.
Oh, Manya on the share. Okay, Manya, come in, come in. Manya, come in.
Hi, Brother Dio. Sister Yun Chan. Actually, if you do not have symptom and you are still negative, you don't have to quarantine yourself. Don't have to quarantine yourself. It's only if you have symptom, then but I have a table. I think it's different. It's not like what you think, you know.
Maybe you forward that table to my Kalimita so that you can read.
Okay, I do that.
Yeah. I know that table. My daughter just read out today only. Actually, we should have tested earlier on the third day, and we have no symptoms. We should be able to go out.
Yeah,
but we quarantine ourselves.
No, you put on the mask, then social distance should be okay. You have to put on the mask. At least double.
Yeah, have to wear mask.
But outside, better wear N95.
Then the other thing, actually we were lucky because I didn't have sore throat. My father also don't have. My brother have, but he like 1 or 2 days and he was gone. He's also now, but don't know whether he COVID or not, but I assume he is because he didn't want to test. He just let it be like that. But Sister Lee, she said that she has some very good medicine for the throat, you know, for sore throat, which I didn't try because I don't have sore throat. That one is a medical shop in, I think, Old Town, where they will, if you order, they will make delivery to the house.
Oh, that's good. Then you then should contact Miss Lee.
Yeah, that one. But if you say Raymond got diabetic, then must consult the medical shop also to ask whether suitable or not. But she said that she had recommended other people and it was very effective. That one is, I think it's a liquid. You just need to heat it up and then drink only.
Oh,
I didn't try that one.
That one is quite convenient.
So just that one, but if Raymond getting well already, I think no problem.
If you need help, you can call Manyuan or Sister Lee, or even Padmasri also, I think. She may recommend the cousin Ping An there, access to the Chinese medical shop.
Then we can go to Ping An.
Closer by, Ping An, not bad. They have all the Lianhua thing. That one you buy sure, authentic one.
They have
the original one. You buy from them sure, not the fake one.
Okay.
Papa's cousin.
I have been to Ping An, so can check out, can check them out.
They can also deliver to your house, you see. So give them the address. They can also deliver to your house. You call them back the phone line.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We will send our metta and blessing for Raymond.
Thank you.
For him to have a speedy and quick recovery. So you also take care, your daughter.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sadhu, for the good sharing and the condition. Let us rejoice. Sadhu.
Sorry, I came in very late. I just was very busy over the last few months again. That's why I was not joining.
Don't worry.
But I sincerely would like to thank you, Brother Teo,
for
your continuous sharing, because I do listen.
Yeah,
from all the videos and also audios.
Sadhu.
And the past few sharing has been very good.
Yeah, they were very good actually.
Yes. So if I may share just a quick bit in my journey of meditation and also learning the Dharma. So one of my observation of myself was the habitual tendency.
That one is very important.
Occasionally, it comes back up.
That's why when you are aware, you can see all this, the habitual tendency. These are the things that are very difficult to root out.
Yeah.
Well, these are our habitual tendency. In Mandarin, they call xiguan. The things that we often do, our habits, our tendency.
And I'm also very grateful because I can observe this, and it doesn't repeat like last time where sometimes will just go heedlessly, and continuously for a long period of time. So this
a
time
lot
I
of remember. People are actually trapped in habitual tendency without them realizing. Then they get angry, emotional, unhappy, miserable for nothing. But when you cultivate the Dhamma, when you are mindful and aware, it will not prolong, it will not like proliferate and continue to like torment the individual. Just like what you have developed as understanding and you went through. You see, then you know, no point. You have straightened your view, you will not dwell into it. Then these are all sankhara. Sankhara, that condition, attachment, craving, then no amount of reasoning or what we call analysis can actually help us. No point. That's why sankhara anicchang, sankhara dukkang. Think also about that, don't think also about that, no point. What we need is right view to cultivate noble eightfold path, to resolve it amicably. So right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and resolving things amicably. Then have clarity of mind to accept the reality of the moment. Then from there, inquire what happened. How can we move on? How can we resolve this amicably? Then the noble eightfold path, the Dhamma, will fall into place. Then from there, you realize life becomes so much easier, so much more simple. No need to be like last time. Small, small thing can make you miserable, unhappy, and sleepless night and all this thing. Then the fear, worry, anxiety, all these are unnecessary. When your thought project, you develop fear. What is all this? Sankhara dukkham. Sankhara bring about suffering because you attach, you cling. You give rise to the projected thought that project your fear, your worry. And these are not the reality. And when you understand all this, then it all starts to subside. Then no point thinking. What is important is accept the reality, straighten your view, then move. Move with understanding. Apply Noble Eightfold Path to resolve things amicably. Do what you need to do. So different situation demands different understanding. You just apply the usual three-way. Need to ask for forgiveness? Ask for forgiveness. Need to repent? Repent. Then after that, cultivate. Vow not to repeat all this, which we have done as Kayamita, as cultivator of the way. Then after that, invoke power of merit. So invoking power of merit for turnaround is very beautiful. We are already as Kayamita, cultivator of the way. We have the Dhamma. Then whatever happens, if we have the understanding, we will accept the reality of the moment. Then need to ask for forgiveness, ask for forgiveness. Then after that, no need to develop any unnecessary fear, worry, anxiety. Just come to terms with the reality, be at peace, then with clarity of mind, move, act with wisdom, act with understanding. Do not act according to your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your memory, no point. All those are not conducive. What is conducive is the Dhamma. The Dhamma, through proper understanding and cultivation, can actually free the mind, liberate the mind. So most of the time, you are relatively peaceful. Yeah. And no more fear, no more worry, no more anxiety. No matter what happened, you don't need to panic. It's just a reality. Accept it and move. Do what you have to do. And all this, you need to go through as you go through life. Because you don't go through, you cannot live it. You cannot exercise the Dhamma understanding. So very good, Kongwen.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. I also like to take this opportunity to say thank you to Brother Teo La for consistently doing the video and Dhamma sharing over the past 2 years.
Three
times a week.
This pandemic is very good.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Oh yeah, before I forget, Thursday and coming Thursday and Sunday, I think we have to cancel the class. Yes. My daughter not around. She may follow Ben to their hometown. I think they got Qing Beng thing, I think, going on.
Good. Have a good rest.
No problem. No. So that reminds me of that. Sui will send the notice out. So you also can have 2 days of rest. Those who still haven't gone for your Qing Beng, you plan this weekend, you can go, no problem.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Jiu.
Yeah, sadhu.
I think I will end here.
Yeah.
Next time I'll do my sharing.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Brother Jiu.
Yeah. Okay, let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.